Have you guys ever tried explaining football to a little kid? It's almost impossible to make it make sense. I've got two kids myself, and they're always like, Dad, what's this thing on TV for your work? When can we watch some Paw Patrol? Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. The way they teach is super unique and effective. As an example, they have this beanbag toss game with four tries to teach downs in football. I tried it with my kids. They love it. And later they connect those games back to the sport itself through a storybook. Seriously, check out the reviews on this thing. They have 4.9 stars on Amazon. Imagine your kid asking to watch on Sundays with you or being right there alongside you for all the ups and downs with your favorite team. That's what dreams are made of right there. And Future Fans exists to make that a reality. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. And it's only $49.99 right now. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories starting now. That's $49.99. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Monday Morning Quarterback. I'm Matt Verderam alongside Gilberto Manzano. Hopefully you had a happy holiday, happy new year, enjoyed it wherever you are. Thank you for listening here as we ring in 2024. We're getting to the football stuff, and God knows there's a lot of that as we go into Week 18. How was your new year? Did you do anything? Were you awake for midnight? Where did you fall on that?
I got to say, Matt, it was a struggle to get to midnight. I was hanging out with family, and I kept checking my phone. I was like, oh, it's only 9:30, 10. Do we have to wait for this? Can we just go out for East Coast time? You know, I'm in L.A., so we're 3 hours behind. And yeah, you know, we got there. It was a good time, though, but it was a struggle this time of year. And, Matt, I'm going to break my own rule here. I say don't tell me Happy New Year after January 3rd, but I haven't seen you, so Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. You know what? New Year always cracks me up in Chicago here in the Midwest, because I grew up on the East Coast, grew up in New York, where I was for the last couple of weeks, and it's always funny to me, like when I first moved to Chicago 2015, so I went out with my girlfriend, now my wife, and we went out to some bar back in the days where we had kids and responsibility, and they're watching the ball drop in Times Square, and everybody's counting down and throwing all this crap, you know, confetti and everything. I'm like, you're the biggest bunch of frauds in the world. It's 11 o'clock. Like, it legitimately bothered me as a New Yorker. I'm like, you guys are celebrating the wrong time. Like, here we are in Chicago with a bunch of D-list celebrities having their own ball drop, which is just a disgrace. And everybody celebrated, and then an hour went by, and it was actually midnight, and then everybody did it again. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, this is not the proper way to do this. Like, put it on delay, do whatever you got to do. But like, to celebrate the ball dropping in New Year's at 11 Central is one of the most embarrassing things I've ever been a part of. It literally made me want to move back to New York. I was so ashamed for everybody involved, because my whole life, when it was New Year's for me, it was New Year's. Like, that was it. You know, you had the ball drop and everything else. And now you have these frauds in the Midwest who are like, it's 11 o'clock. Yay. Like, no, it's embarrassing. I'm ashamed for everybody involved.
And to do it twice, too, that's a real commitment to this bit here of a pretending.
I was dying. It was New Year's. If you could find the cam footage of that place, the second time they celebrated, I'm laughing so hard at my table. Like, it's such an embarrassment. It's already embarrassing enough you celebrated an hour early because you just wanted to be in on it. But then to double back and do it again, it's like, come on now. Let's stop it. Like, I was completely caught off guard by this, considering I'd never been anywhere but New York for New Year. And so, like, it was like, when they did it at 11, I was like, that's really weird. And then they did it again, and I just busted out laughing. I was like, this is unbelievable. So then I started thinking, like, on the West Coast, you guys celebrate, like, three different times? Like, do you guys, hey, it's mountain time, yeah! Like, just start throwing stuff around.
It's always like a message. Somebody in the party says, "Hey, actually, right now on East Coast is it's midnight, so they're celebrating." And it's like, who cares? Let's keep doing our own thing. Yeah, 3 hours,
it's 9 o'clock.
We can't do anything right now. Yeah. But nice mention.
It's just so weird to me. And then like it was the first couple of years when I moved out here, I still had like a lot of friends who would text me Happy New Year at 11 o'clock out here, and it is so anticlimactic now living here that. Like this time, like I said, I was in New York, so it was different. But like when I'm at home, my wife goes to bed at like 9 o'clock at night. Those days of being up and partying are long gone. So I'll be sitting there watching like Ted Lasso, and all of a sudden I look down at my phone, it's 12:16. I'm like, oh, hey, cool, Happy New Year. Like it doesn't register anymore. It doesn't have quite the impact that it once did. I remember being 20 and 21, and yeah, back then in college, I had my girlfriend in college. I'm like, let's go to Times Square. Let's go down there and let's party. Let's do it. And now I watch it, and I'm 35, and I'm like, man, you couldn't pay me enough to go to Times Square, freezing my ass off. People have been standing out there on those bike rails for 20 hours trying to get as close as they can to the ball drop. And look, I'm not going to go too far into this, but think about it. Like, if you got to take a leak, you got a problem. Like, you're not getting back to that spot, right? So you got to figure out the way to make that happen. And I'm guessing some people are so liquored up that it's not a problem, but it's... I have family who used to be in the NYPD, and they would always say, Matt, don't do it. You have to work those nights. It's the worst night of the year. Don't go anywhere near it. Watch it on TV. And I took their advice.
Yeah, I'm glad I stayed home for this or the last few New Year's Eve.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. All right. Talking about staying home, as I segue like a professional here, we got Week 18 storylines. By the end of this week, 18 teams, they will be staying home. 14 are going on now. With that being said, I'm not going to run down every single scenario because some of them are crazy and borderline impossible. But here's what we know about the playoffs right now. So in the AFC, the Ravens have clinched home field. They're 13-3, best record in football, number one seed throughout the playoffs, home field, all that. The Chiefs, they clinched the AFC West by beating Cincinnati last weekend. They're the three seed, no matter what happens. And the Browns, they are a wild card. They will be the best wild card team. They are the five seed. So all those teams are going to rest their starters. We've already talked about that. Those teams are locked in. Now, the Dolphins have clinched a playoff berth. They have not clinched anything more than that. They could be, they will be the two seed if they win against Buffalo. If they lose, they are the six seed. There are no other scenarios. They will go to Kansas City if they lose. For Buffalo, if the Bills win, they are the two seed. But here's where it gets interesting, and I want to segue in here. If the Bills lose, there is a very, very, very real world where they miss the playoffs. Now, what would have to happen is Pittsburgh would have to beat a second-hand Baltimore team because Baltimore's not playing anybody. That game's Saturday afternoon. And then Jacksonville would have to beat Tennessee. Tennessee, of course, 5-11 right now. Jacksonville might be getting Trevor Lawrence and Christian Kirk back this week. That game is in Nashville. But if Jacksonville and Pittsburgh win their games, which they're favored to do, and Buffalo were to lose at Miami, Buffalo is out of the playoffs. So, with all that as a backdrop here, let's dive right in. Who do you have getting into the playoffs, both in the AFC? Who do you think makes who clinches the last three spots? And then in the NFC, where in the NFC, quickly, Philly's in, Dallas is in. We don't know who's going to win the East yet. Dallas beats Washington, they win the East. They'd be the two seed, Philly'd be the five. Tampa can clinch by beating Carolina. The Niners are the one seed. The Rams are a wild card. And the Lions have won their division. So there's a couple spots there. Who gets in the AFC and the NFC?
Yeah, I'll start with the NFC. And Buccaneers, just handle business. Go beat the terrible Panthers and just beat them down handily and win the division. You had an opportunity last week, and you had a stinker against the Saints there. You know, I know the Saints had like a 10 days of rest, and they got to the Buccaneers. But handle business, make that one easy. And then I'm kind of intrigued, but obviously the Rams already clinched, but I want to see them get that six seed to play the Lions, number three, and that'll be Matthew Stafford going to Detroit. But they need Carson Wentz to beat out Sam Darnold. Kind of an intriguing little matchup there. So obviously they got the six there. And then you know what? I will say the Bears, even though I already know I'm gonna do something terrible here, but MMQB staff picks, I went the Packers, but I'm changing my mind. I think the Bears could beat the Packers. Seahawks beat the Cardinals. Maybe the Seahawks take that last spot right there. And then over in the AFC, it's wild to me that the Bills have been a fringe playoff team for so many weeks, and they have a shot to get the number two seed or maybe not even make it at all. I think that's the chaos that this new seven seed format I think created, and we got the kind of that weird quirkiness there. But I think the Bills will beat the Dolphins. Maybe I'm giving away some more picks for later on, but that's number two right there. And then obviously got the Browns number five. And then what we got? Okay, you know what? I think CJ Stroud's going to shine on prime time to take one of those wild card spots there.
Okay,
and then to jump the Colts. And then I think the Jaguars. I've been very critical of the Jaguars. They did handle business against the Panthers with CJ Beathard, 26-0. But I say Jaguars handle business, winning the division. Did I miss anybody from the open spots?
You got it. Okay, well done. All right, so I'll try to be simple. So I think in the South, in both divisions, I think the teams that are currently first will win. I think Jacksonville will beat Tennessee. I could see Tennessee putting up a fight. Like, by the way, you see Vrabel's press conference?
Yeah.
Where Vrabel's like, well, it sucks to lose. And I just teed off on some poor reporter. I'm like,
all right. What do you want me to do? Flip a table?
Yeah, I'm like, hey, man, it is what it is. Yeah, I think, well, as much as I respect Mike Vrabel, I do think they will lose this weekend. I think Jacksonville will win. I think they'll be the 4 seed, which would set up Jacksonville hosting Cleveland. And I guess I can't imagine Tampa's losing to Carolina. Like, I just can't. That to me, that would be one of the worst losses in franchise history, which for the Bucs is really saying something. So I think those two teams will win. They'll be their respective 4 seeds in their conferences. The Bears are a really, really, really intriguing team this weekend. I think the Packers win. I think the Bears are going to cover the 3.5. Like, I think it's going to be a death match, basically, up at Lambeau. The Packers will get in. And by the way, I am with you, though, and I think it's a good point you brought up. If I'm the Rams, I would try to win that football game. Like, I understand you don't want to get anybody hurt. I get it. I'd far rather go to Detroit with the way their defense is playing than go to Dallas. I just would. And, like, I get it. It's Dallas, and it's Mike McCarthy in a playoff game. And, like, we all understand that they could win that game. But I'm with you. I'd rather go there. And I'll tell you what. That is a really interesting second-round game. If they beat Detroit or Dallas and they go to San Francisco, we've talked about this on the pod before. That is one team, if I'm the Niners, I don't want to play them. They are a weird matchup for San Francisco for a lot of reasons, but in any event, we can get to that next week. So I've got, look, I think that the Rams and the Packers will the Rams are already in, but I think they'll both be wild cards along with, I think Philly's going to be a wild card. I think Dallas is going to win the division. In the AFC, have Jacksonville as the 4. I'm going to go the other way. I'll say Indy beats Houston. I don't have a ton of conviction either way. I'm just taking Indy because they're at home. I like their defense better. I just think they find a way. I got to say, I actually think, well, here, let me say this first. I think Buffalo's going to win as well. I'm with you. Miami has the feel of a team right now with the defensive injuries. Kind of feels like a dead team walking. Like, that's just, kind of feel like they lose to Buffalo and then they go to Arrowhead and it's like, you really going to win that game at Arrowhead when it's 10 degrees out? I don't know. You know, again, we'll get to that next week. But I'll tell you what, I don't know how you feel about this. I am very confident in the Bills this week, and then I am extremely unconfident if they play Indianapolis or Houston. It's just like that's who they've been. Like, I could see Jonathan Taylor rushing for a 150 in that game, and it's just, you're like, oh my God, is it really 27-23 in the fourth quarter? Like, I'm not even saying they'll lose. I just think it'd be a weird game that they could lose. Of all the games we just talked about, the games that involve these teams, you know, we think are going to make the playoffs, it always feels like there's one game that you look at the end of the day and go, how the hell did that happen? Like, what? If you had to pick one of those games, which game would it be?
Like, in terms of being excited?
Like one of these teams that are winning in that just fall apart this weekend.
Fall apart. It's tough, man, because I guess it could be Buffalo, but it just feels like it's all set up for them. Because of the injuries to the Dolphins. And, hey, the Dolphins are at home, and maybe they figure something out. But I don't know. But Mike McDaniel, he's a great coach when it comes to, you know, being an offensive play caller. But they can't adjust. And the one team that can't afford injuries is the Miami Dolphins because they can't adjust. And they can't figure out different schemes or just kind of like, you know, it's a zone running scheme and bombs away offensively. And defensively, they figure it out with Vic Fangio. But then now, no Bradley Chubb, no Jalen Phillips. Maybe no Xavier Howard, and we still got to monitor Raheem Mostert and Jalen Waddle. But I guess to give you an answer, it could be Buffalo because it could be a nice, you know, like a summary of the season. It's just up and down. They're not consistent. And when you want to believe in them, they go lay a dud maybe in Miami. So they barely survive against the Patriots. They barely survive against the Chargers. You know, they somewhat got a little lucky at Arrowhead Stadium to get that win. But to get four straight in a row from go 6-6 to go to be in the bye week and having to sit for 2 weeks to that Philly loss in overtime, like yeah. that must have really tested you mentally. And to come out and win four straight, all credit to them. And then they're getting a little healthier defensively. You know, Sean McDermott's done a nice job too from a rough yes. patch. But I could see them maybe, you know, laying a stinker. And why not? Because this season's been filled with upsets. Like, it's never that easy. It's never that predictable. And I know we all, you know, kind of had a pencil did. Watch out for Week 18, Miami and Buffalo. And we all somewhat got that one right. But how about just a weird ending where Miami, you know, proves people wrong with the narrative that they're soft and they can't be winning teams and they win that one?
You know, I think that has to be the game. I mean, yeah, sure. Like, I almost picked Dallas and Washington. Because wouldn't that be the most on-brand yeah. thing in the world for Dallas to go down there and just get smoked Week 18 by Sam Howell? Like, it would be the most, or Jacoby Brissett, whoever the hell is starting this week. I haven't paid enough attention to Washington. but that game has to be it. Because, look, the Bills are capable of going to Miami and winning 49-17. They are also capable of Allen throwing three interceptions and then just imploding in that game. And you walk away from it going, what the hell? Like, how did they manage that? A couple things about the Bills that worry me, and I do think they're going to win this weekend, but they worry me in the playoffs, and I think they're going to, frankly, be at the end of them at some point in the playoffs. Do you know that Stephon Diggs has not had 100 yards since the beginning of October? I mean, he's been brutal. And Tim Graham at The Athletic, great guy and wrote a hell of a piece, he pointed out something that I thought was really interesting. Like, not only are his numbers going down, he's barely playing compared to Shakur and Gabe Davis.
Wow.
Like, that's, I mean, he's seen less snaps than those guys over, I believe it was the last 3 weeks. It's very odd. Like, it's a very, very odd thing. Like, why would that be the case? And yet, here we are. Now, look, for the season, Diggs is still seeing plenty of snaps. Okay, he's still 81%, but that's well below Gabe Davis, who's at 87. And if you go back last year, for comparison's sake, which I think is important, Davis did again lead them last year because Diggs only played in 16 of the games. But Diggs, even with now, he played 77% of the snaps. It's like, okay, is it that far down? Does it make a huge difference? I mean, last year he played 836 snaps total on offense. This year he's at 880. So it's not like it's a crazy drop, but over the game by game this year, that's where it gets a little more interesting. So if you look at it, like early in the year, he's at almost 100%, like well over 90, over and over and over. Then right around when he starts dropping off statistically, makes sense, he's at like 87, 86, 84. Then you go 80, 79, 75, 66, 65, 60, and then 45.6. Like, so early on in the year, he was mostly well above 80. Like, well above 80. And then the last, like, you know, in week 3 and week 4, because they won by such huge margins, he was 76%, 66%. His lowest snap counts of the year by percentage, the last 3 weeks. Like, that is significant right now. Gabe Davis has also had many games this year where he hasn't had a catch. So, like, does Diggs show up in this game, or does Ramsey blanket Diggs and Gabe Davis has one of these days where he has one catch for 9 yards? I just don't trust Miami. We've seen this over and over. At the same point, this is a Miami team that almost beat him in Buffalo last year in a primetime game, in a meaningful game, and then almost beat him with Skylar Thompson in a playoff game. So anything's possible. Let's keep going, though. Look, so we already kind of touched on the second of our storylines and went pretty deep on it, which is the breakdown of this Bills-Dolphins game, so we won't have to go there. But I just want to talk big picture for a second. So if the Bills lose this game, and let's say they don't make the playoffs, let's say that they don't get help and they miss, do you think McDermott's back? Do you think he should be back?
Yeah, if they don't win this game and they miss the playoffs, I think you have to maybe strongly consider a change here. But, you know, winning these 4 games in a row to get to this point to win a division, I'm sure, you know, goes a long way with ownership and the front office. But you've done this dance for a few years now. And, you know, you point out those numbers on Stephon Diggs. Maybe they're trying to prepare for, like, life without Diggs. It could be changes next year. So, and they're, like, in this weird phase, too, you know, going off of the offensive side. Like, They don't know who they are. Like, either they're bombs away with Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs, or they want to run the football heavily with James Cook, which, you know, Joe Brady has really, you know, emphasized. But I was watching that Chargers game pretty closely. It was that weird Peacock. I don't know why I was watching closely, but it was on TV. And you could tell, like, they were having these issues. Like, who do you want to be here? And, you know, at this stage, you know, you've been together. This core has been together for the longest. I get you went through a new OC, but you got to at some point figure it out. And they've been winning these games pretty ugly. McDermott's done a nice job, you know, with, you know, all the injuries to have some good game plans. And that's why part of it, too, why I feel like the Bills are going to beat the Dolphins. Like, week four, when they won 48-20, McDermott had a great game plan to frustrate Tua and say, yep, you're not going down the field here. I'm going to blitz you. I'm going to make you guess here. And it worked to perfection. So I think if you look at the full sample size, maybe we get to another year. But imagine on primetime football, week 18, game 272, everybody's watching, and it's right there, and you miss the playoffs because, you know, the Steelers beat the backup team for the Ravens, and the Jaguars beat the Titans. So it could definitely happen. And, you know, I know for a while people were saying it could be 8 to 10 head coaching vacancies. Now it could be maybe like 5 or 6. And I don't know. I don't know if I see McDermott being one of those guys.
I don't think he's going to get fired. I think the only way he gets fired is if they just get absolutely, like, de-pantsed on national television. Like, if they lost that game something like 45-17 or something. Like, if it just went really haywire, maybe. I get why Bills fans are frustrated with Sean McDermott. I get it. And the whole controversy around his actually, it was a training camp. His training camp conversation, his training camp, you know, pep talk, if you will, that involved 9/11. Like, that wasn't great. Okay. But they've turned that franchise around him there. I mean, I think sometimes people have a short memory. The Bills sucked for 20 straight years. I mean, they were a complete dumpster fire. Okay. I went to college not far from Buffalo from 06 to 09, and I know and, you know, knew at the time tons of Bills fans. That team was abominable back then. I mean, they were, you know, Ryan Edwards was the quarterback, Trent Edwards. Trent Edwards was a quarterback. I mean, they were hideous. J.P. Losman. I mean, that team, ugly jerseys, ugly record, and Tom Brady beating them was pretty much the three guaranteed things every year with that football team. So what you want with McDermott? They won 3 straight AFC titles, trying to make it a 4th on Sunday. They went to the AFC title game in 2020. They went to the divisional round each of the last years. Now, if you want to argue it the other way, you could say, yeah, they're not making enough progress. Allen, for all of his gifts, he's not getting better. He's not getting worse, but he's not getting better. Like, he had that breakout year in 2020, and then after that, like, he's been good the last years. He didn't make the Pro Bowl yesterday. I mean, now the Pro Bowl's a farce, okay? I'm not trying to make the Pro Bowl out like it's the end-all be-all. But I also would argue that he probably didn't deserve to make the Pro Bowl. Like, he hasn't been as good as some of these other guys. So that's the indictment, if you want to go that route. And the other route is, in the playoffs, they have had meltdowns. The 13 seconds game, Cincinnati going in there and just beating the daylights out of them with half of an offensive line, almost losing to Skylar Thompson and Phillip Rivers in your own building. Like, it's been, they've had some close calls. So you can make that call. I do not think he will be fired. Now, on the flip side of Miami, big picture, I think if they lose this game, I mean, look, McDaniel's safe. Like, we're not talking about that. But, like, if they lose this game and they get beat up in this football game and they go to Kansas City in the playoffs, which they will if they lose, I don't know how you feel. I am by no means overly high in the Chiefs right now, who I think are great defensively. Offensively, it's like, what week do you get them on? I don't know how you are with this. I don't think they're beating Kansas City in a playoff game there. Like, if they got to go into that building and play them, I don't think they're doing it. So if that happens and they flame out, let's say they lose to the Chiefs, you know, 27-17. If you're a Dolphins fan, you're looking at it going, all right, yeah, we're better now. We're good. But, like, are we good enough to really challenge Kansas City and Buffalo and Baltimore and Cincy when they're right? I don't know how you could say yes.
Yeah, the only thing I feel like the benefit if they win that game on Sunday night is I could see the Dolphins as a 2 seed beating, you know, the Texans or the Colts, but then,
well, they'd get the Steelers.
They would get
the Steelers.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Yeah, it'd be a scenario there. But, you know, it'll be tough, but I think I feel like they could beat those 3 teams right there, whichever one.
Oh, yeah.
But when you get to the division round, it's kind of like, all right, I don't have no faith in you, Miami, and, like, does that sound like a number 2 team? No, like, they're not a legit number 2 team. So, and maybe in Buffalo to an extent, too. But, you know, to even if it is that matchup you mentioned, the first round with Arrowhead, I don't have any faith in the Dolphins to win that on the road. We saw it in Germany. The Chiefs, you know, barely won that game because they had a scoop and score touchdown, and the score just kind of held up at the end, and they won that game. So they have injuries. They don't know how to adjust in game. They don't really know how to win on the road. And the only big time win they've had this year was, you know, the Cowboys at home. So if we're starting on the road, that's a problem there too. Maybe you get to a division round. Maybe you're one of the top four teams in the AFC. I got no problem with that. After that, you're asking for a lot.
I'll tell you what, I'm not going to lie to you. Just from the enjoyment and the competitive standpoint, divisional round, Buffalo hosting Kansas City would be an insane football game. Like, that would be... You've got Buffalo who's basically, look, they'd be frothing at the mouth for that football game. And then you'd have a Chiefs team going in there. It'd be like, well, we beat you every time we have to play you in the playoffs, so let's dance. That would be, to me, the best division or the best weekend of football all year is a divisional round. Like, I would love, man. Could you imagine, and there's a very real scenario this happens, Baltimore against Joe Flacco and the Browns, the Chiefs in Buffalo, the Rams at the Niners, and the Eagles at the Cowboys.
I mean,
that's a weekend of football. That would be, I mean, you could talk about who's the favorite. Any of those teams could win those games. Like, it wouldn't be shocking to me anyway if the Rams beat the Niners. I wouldn't be shocked if Cleveland beat Baltimore. I wouldn't be shocked if Philadelphia went to Dallas or Kansas City went to Buffalo and won. Like, those would be great games.
How about the Cowboys getting a home playoff game in the division round to finally end the streak of not making it to the NFC title game in 3 decades? Like, that'd be right there for them.
Yeah. Well, you'd have a scenario maybe coming out of that where it'd be like Dallas and San Francisco in the NFC title game, old school, bring it back. Yeah. And then you'd have, like, let's say Baltimore wins against whoever comes out of Buffalo, Kansas City. I mean, you could have some great matchups in the divisional round. I might have to see if SI's got a little travel budget there. You know, go to those games.
KC and Buffalo would be very intriguing too, to see the kind of tables have turned.
And it'd be a weird thing, because if that game materializes, like, all the pressure in the world's on Buffalo in that game. Yeah. You've got to win. You're at home. You haven't won. Like, the Chiefs would be in a very odd position of being like, hey, we got nothing to lose in this game. Like, it would be very, very, I'd love to see that football game. Want to go to our bigger story section quickly. Justin Fields. He's played well recently. Well enough, and the Bears have played well recently. The Bears are 7-9, which doesn't sound incredible, but then you factor in that last year, they started out 2-1 and then proceeded to win one more game the rest of the year. They went 3-14. They were awful. Obviously, ended up finishing with the first overall pick they traded out of. Now they have the first overall pick again, but it's because Carolina stinks. And the Bears have two first-rounders, number one overall as well, excuse me. If you look at Fields here, he started awful, awful, awful this year. It was terrible. First three games. Since his first three games, he has thrown, and mind you, he was inactive for a month with a thumb injury. So since his first three games, played nine games since, he's thrown for 13 touchdowns. He's only thrown five picks. And his completion percentage is not great on the year. It's 61%. It's been up and down, even recently, a little up and down. One game this year, over 300 yards passing, came against Denver in a game that actually blew, although it was no fault of Fields in that game. So I ask you, what is the bigger story? Fields' improved play over the last, let's say, 6 weeks. Or do you think it's the number one draft pick sitting there for Chicago, where obviously if they want to, they can take, let's say, Caleb Williams or Drake May? Which is the bigger story, and what direction would you go?
I'll go with Justin Fields. And when you mentioned that he got hurt, like, if he stayed healthy the entire season, they'd probably make a playoff, maybe a wild card.
They really might have, yeah.
So that really will go a long way. And, you know, just to kind of, you know, make a point here, because I'm not always right, you know, surprise, surprise. But I don't know if you remember this, Matt, for our bold prediction at SI, I had a very specific prediction, and I said, the Bears are going to struggle early, but they're going to have a 2022 Detroit Lions-like finish where they fall short of the playoffs. So if they beat the Packers and they end 8-9, I'm going to take that victory lap and say, see, I called that one. I got something there. But, hey, Fields has been an impressive. That connection with DJ Moore has been pretty lethal against, you know, against opposing defenses. And I don't know how much weight that carries, but DJ Moore is out there vouching Justin Fields the guy. You got to keep Justin Fields. I don't even get why people are talking about this. Well, DJ Moore, they have the number one pick, and they're going to have options over Caleb Williams, Drake May, maybe a Jaden Daniels. But, you know, I think having Fields develop and show progress, improvement, that he's not just relying on running the football. You know, he's still very dangerous on that aspect. But to develop with DJ Moore and become a little more polished as a passer, it just opens up opportunities for the Bears to, hey, you want to trade down maybe two spots to take a Marvin Harrison Jr. to pair with DJ Moore and Justin Fields and get a first round pick out of it and get more picks? Like, you're just building up the franchise, because this roster, maybe before that trade went down with the Bryce Young trade, they probably had the worst roster in the NFL. And now they've added pieces and pieces with these trades. So you make another one like that, you're really building. And I just don't get this thing where, like, you know, you get Caleb Williams or Drake May, whatever it is. Maybe you fire Matt Eberflus. Like, why do you want to hit the reset button where you're finally seeing the progress? Like, you knew how long this progress was going to be. And I'm actually surprised I'm talking like this, because you would have asked me a month ago, I would have said, take the quarterback all day. It's not working right now. But the results are out there. You're building. And I think with Fields doing the development and flourishing, and you have the number one pick, it just creates a bunch of options. Even if you go get the quarterback, you could flip Fields for a second round pick, maybe a first round pick. So he's a good quarterback right now. And I think that really opens up the window of opportunities for the Chicago Bears.
Great points. I would take Caleb Williams because you can flip Fields, which you mentioned, and get a pick. Also, Fields is eligible for an extension this offseason. And whether it's this year or next, if he becomes what you hope he becomes, you're talking about spending $45, $50 million a year. Now, look, that's not a bad problem to have. Like, then you got a good quarterback. And if he doesn't become that, well, then you're kind of screwed because he didn't become a really good quarterback. My problem with Fields is this. I like him, but do I ever think he's going to be a top five, top eight guy in the NFL? I don't. I just don't think he's going to become that. I don't think he's consistent enough as a passer. And if you get Caleb Williams or Drake May, whoever you like, and that kid ends up being like an elite, elite player, you're set. And you got him cheap for years, and you still have the pick you get for Fields and another pick. You have your own pick. So that's what I would do if I'm Chicago. I would keep Eberflus. I think he's done a hell of a job, quite honestly. That team, I mean, who the hell thought they'd be 7-9 right now after the way that season started, yeah, right? So I would definitely keep Eberflus. I would go the route of Caleb Williams personally. At the same point, if they don't, I get it. Because, look, the point you make is fair. Like, if they trade that number one overall pick, they're getting three first-round picks. They're getting a fortune for that. So it's not a crazy decision. Like, you could certainly do that. There's even a world, like, the other part of this is, too, what if you make that trade and you trade back, let's say, to, I'm just throwing a number out there, like, pick five. Maybe you do that trade and you get Jaden Daniels or Penix. You just get a quarterback anyway. And then still have all these picks. So there's a lot of options on the table for Ryan Poles, no question.
Yeah, and it definitely starts with Justin Fields developing. And I'll give some credit to Matt Eberflus, too, because, you know, he was in the hot seat. And to see him be number one run defense in the NFL, they struggle in the pass defense, but they keep the cornerback at Johnson, right? You know, maybe they'll develop there and get some pieces to get the secondary. But they're showing progress, both sides, offense and defense. And I feel like, you know, why mess with that? But then again, if they really like Caleb Williams and they feel like he's a for sure guy, go ahead and do it. But we've seen these draft picks, and I know Justin Fields part of that 2021. But even like a guy with Trevor Lawrence, everybody says he's going to be the next, you know, Andrew Luck, and he hasn't really been that guy. So really, it's going to be something where you really trust your scouting department and you bet on the guy. But it's good to have options, and Chicago's done something right.
Yeah. Listen, no question. They deserve a lot of credit. They deserve a lot of credit for everything that they've been able to do here the last 3 months after what looked like a complete tire fire early on.
2 months ago. It's wild.
Oh, it's nuts. Things change, man. Things change in a hurry. All right. So week 18's here. We're not going to run down the lines because we've already given you who we think are going to win a lot of these games. Yeah. That matter. I don't think anybody really gives a damn if, you know, the Chargers cover, and if you do, you're sick. So instead, we're just going to kind of run down some awards quick. We're not going to dwell on these. We're not going to take forever. Some of them I think are pretty obvious. Week 18, going into it here, a lot of guys already sitting, so I think the awards are kind of what they are at this point. Who do you have as your MVP?
Yeah, I think Lamar Jackson wrapped it up a week ago. And to put that beat down on the Dolphins in the same week you beat the 49ers, it was a Monday Night Football game. You're the one traveling and then coming home in 6 days. Notice to beat Miami. And yeah, they're a little banged up. No Mostert, no Jalen Waddle. But hey, you know, to do that, you know, and then also not let up too, like 56 points, that's a lot.
They
right
put
there.
It on them.
Yeah, so they were trying to, you know, make a statement, win the number one seed, win the division. And then, yeah, you know, Lamar Jackson, I get that the numbers aren't as pretty as some of these other quarterbacks, but you got to account for everything. Like, you know, you got to keep that guy in the pocket. He's going to extend play. He's going to frustrate opposing players, you know, every single week. He still runs heavily with his legs, but not as much. And that's the dangerous part. He keeps improving as a passer. When he won that first MVP, he was just a very accurate down the field, you know, quarterback. Now he's, you know, using all sides of the field. I think he might, I haven't checked, but I think he was a 70% completion percentage for a long time. Maybe he's still there, maybe not. They're passing the ball a little more. But to me, Matt, when I saw that shootout against the Rams a few weeks back, I'm like, all right, they answered some questions for me, because I felt like, you know, those modest numbers were saying, okay, you might be the team that still likes to play with the lead. You like to run the football, but they could go toe-to-toe with anybody. And to do what they did to the 49ers in Miami back in the same week, back-to-back victories, I think to me said, okay, you have the best record. You're the most dangerous offensive player in the NFL. You got good enough numbers. So for me, that was good enough.
I'm short and sweet. I'm with you. By the way, he's completing 67% of his passes.
Okay, a little drop.
I looked it up for you. So the one argument I have not understood the last couple of weeks, and I will just quickly, in my opinion, dispel it. The idea that, like, Lamar Jackson hasn't thrown for enough touchdowns. The guy's thrown 24 touchdown passes. And I've seen a lot of, like, people on Twitter, especially people who are fans of teams that have established quarterbacks, you know, Buffalo, Kansas City, who doesn't throw enough touchdowns. He's thrown 24 touchdowns this year against 7 picks. Josh Allen's thrown 27 touchdowns to 3 more. He's thrown 16 interceptions. I mean, it's not even close. And Mahomes, who, look, I mean, he's not been helped out by the fact that nobody on that team can catch, but, like, he's got 27 touchdown passes. He's got 14 interceptions. I mean, Jackson, now he's not throwing for the yardage that those guys throw. Mahomes is at 41.83. Allen's at 39.47. Okay, Lamar is well below that. He is at 36.78. Okay, but Lamar also has run for much more than those guys have. And look, do I think Lamar Jackson's a better quarterback than Patrick Mahomes? No. Do I think he's an MVP this year? Yeah, I do. I mean, those are two separate conversations. And the one thing I don't buy into, I'm sorry, I don't care how upset this makes a few people out there. Like, look, I don't care that you ran for a touchdown from the 1 yard line. I don't care. Just stop. Like, I don't care. Like, I had people DMing, not DMing me, tweeting at me, like, Allen scored 2 touchdowns against New England. He ran for 1 yard twice. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Like, if you run it in from the 15, call me, which, by the way, he does sometimes. But it's the same way I felt about when the argument with Jalen Hurts last year against Mahomes, and people would be like, well, he's rushed for 15 touchdowns. He's got 10 off the tush push. I mean, who cares? So to me, the total touchdown thing, at times it can matter. But when, like, 12 of those are because, like, you fell over from 3 feet out, I don't really care. Like, Lamar Jackson's degree of difficulty this year has been significant. He does not have Mark Andrews. Keaton Mitchell's out for the year. Dobbins is out. He's been out the whole year. Ronnie Stanley's been in and out of the lineup consistently for them. Like, Zay Flowers is their best receiver. He's a rookie. I mean, and he's been good, by the way. But, like, his degree of difficulty has been harder, in my opinion, than what has been around the league. I mean, Dak has better weapons. Purdy obviously has much better weapons. Lamar Jackson deserves to be the MVP this season. So we agree, and we can move on. Who do you have as your offensive player of the year?
Offensive player of the year. Man. Because Tyreek Hill kind of dipped a little bit at the injury and didn't reach the 2K. But and CeeDee Lamb has been just lights out. I want to say maybe you had him in the preseason, by the way, Matt. So credit to you on that one. But you know what? I'll go with Tyreek Hill. He's been doing it all year. Yeah, he had the injury there. But he's just so – I know it's not MVP, but he's so important to the offense there. And like, everybody knows where the football is going down the field, and you still can't cover the guy. And to still be averaging those numbers, you know, on every Sunday on a weekly basis to flirt with, 2,000 yards there. He didn't get it, but to me, you know, I know I call Lamar Jackson a dangerous weapon, but Tyreek Hill might be number one overall, regardless of position. So you know it's coming. You can't account for it. You can't figure it out. So, you know, I think I'm okay with the offensive player of the year.
it's so funny watching Tyreek Hill, like when teams try to double him, and the second he takes off the line, he's just gone. Like, just immediately one guy's just like, or he's not a factor anymore.
And he's like sitting down now. He's like having fun out there. He's like this weird stance he's doing.
Yeah, when he goes in motion, it's ridiculous. Yeah. I will go with Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey is going to win the rushing title. So Kyren Williams, who's had a great year under the radar for a lot of people, by the way. Kyren Williams is second in the league in rushing yardage. He's 315 yards behind Christian McCaffrey. Like, it's unbelievable. And then you factor in, of course, McCaffrey's such a great pass catcher as well. So McCaffrey total, if I can do the math really quick, McCaffrey has, yeah, he has over 2,000 yards from scrimmage this year and 21 touchdowns. Like, he's my guy. I got to go offensive player of the year for him. He's just been invaluable. And I know he's surrounded by a ton of guys. It makes his life a little bit easier. I get all that. I got to go that way. All right, who do you have a defensive player of the year? Who do you like?
Yeah, this one was a little tough here, but you know, I think Myles Garrett, he is the one guy, or not, shouldn't be the one guy, but one of few people who could single-handedly wreck a game. And to see, I know there was moments where that Browns defense had some let-ups there, like the Colts game comes to mind. I know the Ravens and them had a shootout, but they're still, you know, probably top two defense in the NFL. They had some injuries too in the secondary, and he was still holding it down to, you know, get the sacks, you know, get, you know, to create an interception, you know, just because you're putting your hands in the air to block a field goal. Like, this guy's a monster, and to see it finally happen with help, like all the moves the Browns made in the offseason, it was to help Myles Garrett. Like, we all see the Pro Football Focus numbers, like, yeah, they kind of stink overall. They don't really do anything. And then you see Myles Garrett, okay, well, he's good, but he doesn't have a lot of help. And then you finally put the help on there, and they're top two, top one, whatever category, and most defensive categories that really matter. So, you know, I know it hasn't been a full, consistent picture, but Myles Garrett is a game wrecker, and, you know, I got no problem with Myles Garrett.
So, it's funny. First of all, I'm with you. I'm picking Myles Garrett, okay? The Browns this year are 7th in sacks. They have 46 sacks a day. All right. They are a little above average in blitz rate, and yet they get a ton of pressure. They're top 10 in the league. The reason I'm bringing all this up is I know there are a lot of Steelers fans who, the second you say Myles Garrett, they're like, TJ Watt! Like, yeah. I get it. TJ Watt's leading the league, and look, he is phenomenal. You can't go wrong. The one thing I'll say, though, is I feel like, and I know there were parts of the year these guys have missed, but like Alex Highsmith is a damn good player across from him. And Hayward, in my opinion, is a Hall of Famer. Okay? You have those guys on that front with him. Myles Garrett, like you alluded to the fact they got him help. They did. They brought in like Zadarius Smith, and they brought in Okonkwo. You want to take a guess? After Myles Garrett, who, like, now it's Zadarius Smith. He's who's second in sacks. You know how many sacks he has on that team?
So like 4 or 5.
5.5. Yeah. Like, there's nobody else. Like, Myles Garrett is the guy that every single, like, if they play Jacksonville in the playoffs this weekend, or next weekend, excuse me, next weekend, you and I both know Doug Peterson sitting down there, and he's going to put in a big old circle around 95, and he's like, that guy. Like, whatever it takes, stop that guy. Now, you're circling 90 for the Steelers, but you're also circling Highsmith, and you're also circling Hayward. You're not doing that with Cleveland. Like, you're circling Garrett, and you're like, okay, if Okonkwo can beat me, go nuts, man. Like, beat me. Fine. I don't care. Garrett, to me, is when he's rolling, he's as dominant as anybody in football. He would get my nod. I think he deserves it. Also, quietly, shout out to Deron Bland, who has 6 pick sixes this year. Yeah. Like, that's insane. But I'm going with Garrett. All right, let's go coach of the year. Let's go coach of the year.
Coach of the year. You know what? I'll stick with Cleveland, and I'll go Kevin Stefanski. And, you know, I wanted to go with Dan Campbell. And also, I want to just say this. I don't like this kind of criteria where, like, if you're a new coach, a first-year coach, and you take a team from last to first, you automatically get the coach of the year. So, obviously, I like what the DeMeco Ryans have done and Shane Steichen and, you know, coaches like that. But, you know, it's okay to give it to a guy, you know. And also, too, like, if you won it, like, you can't ever win it again. I don't get that part. Like, John Harbaugh, maybe a Sean McVay could be involved. Even Kyle Shanahan, but I'm not even sure if Kyle Shanahan's ever won it. But, you know, Gomez Stefanski, he just had so much to overcome, like all the quarterback shuffling And then, like, you know, one quarterback is not – like, Deshaun Watson wasn't playing so well, so you have to adjust your scheme to maybe a little more run heavy. You lose Nick Chubb. And then Joe Flacco comes. Oh, this guy can actually throw it down the field. Well, let's tweak the scheme, and they're bombs away with David Njoku suddenly now playing like an all-pro. So a credit to Joe Flacco on that one. And then you also have a complete team with I know it's Jim Schwartz handling defense, but he's still the head coach. He oversees everything. So you have a good defense, a good offense. You won 11 games. And after right now, they're dealing with a bunch of injuries in the offensive line, and you're still scoring that much with Joe Flacco, 30-year-old quarterback. So I think just all the issues that occurred throughout the year and to still, you know, go into week 18 not caring about where you're going to go into the playoffs because you already locked it up, I think goes a long way for Stefanski.
I hear you, and I agree with you. Stefanski's my guy. I think Kevin Stefanski deserves it. They've started now with Driscoll this weekend. It's going to be five quarterbacks. Has any team – I mean, I actually want to do the research on this because I'm enough of a nerd at some point to do this. Has any team ever made the playoffs in a non-strike year with five different starting quarterbacks? That's insane.
Good question.
Like, you even want to draw a Driscoll front. Four in 16 weeks, 16 meaningful weeks, so four quarterbacks. And Flacco, my God, he looks like he's going to make the Pro Bowl. It's been unbelievable. Now, he's thrown 10 picks, but like, it doesn't matter. Keeps overcoming it. Stefanski's my guy. They've overcome so much. Campbell deserves love. Harbaugh deserves some credit. But I feel like those teams, like, you expected those teams to be good. Like, it's not like that's some unbelievable coaching job. Where in Cleveland, I remember watching them in the preseason and thinking, I don't know, man. Like, I was at camp watching. It was ugly. It was not good. Like, I was there, and I was watching, I don't think, with Ben Solak of The Ringer. And we're watching practice. It was pouring, soaking wet standing there. And we were both times like, oh, ooh. Like, he was, I mean, there's some balls that were like skipping on the raindrops off the ground. Like, this is not good. And he's got that team, not only in the playoffs, but like somewhat dangerously in the playoffs. So I'm with you. If I had to go second and third place, though, I would go with Steichen and Ryan's. Nobody thought those teams were going to be any good. Yeah. Nobody. And Steichen lost his quarterback. Hell of a job. Hell of a job by those guys. All right, last award here. Comeback player of the year. Now, I'll preface this by saying this is a little bit different than normal. Like, a lot of times you're sitting there looking at guys, you're like, okay, this guy came back from a blown out knee, this guy came back from this. Damar Hamlin literally came back from being dead. Now, on that alone, you're like, well, that guy's got to be the comeback player of the year. But then there's also, like, he hasn't played much this year. He's been inactive most of the game. So there has been that conversation. Would you still just give it to Hamlin based on what is obviously an incredible, heartwarming story? Or would you go another route because somebody's maybe played more, had more of an impact?
Yeah, I honestly want to know what Damar Hamlin thinks about this. Like, hey, like, would he say, you know what? I don't really want it. I haven't played that much. But, you know, I don't know. Like, but to me, you know, it is a story that where he came a lot of adversity. Like you mentioned, you know, he's on the field, you know, wasn't responding. And then to come back and to make the 53-man roster, I think, was a big deal. And then to also contribute. And the reason why, for me, it's kind of been on my radar for the start of the season, when I saw he was a candidate to not even make the roster for the Bills 53-man, I said, you know, what the heck? I won't pick it for comeback player of the year. And I know my editors had a check in. Are you sure you don't want to put in Damar Hamlin? And I went with Lamar Jackson. I was like, I'm not sure he's going to play enough. I'm not sure he's even going to make the roster. He did. And it's a good story. So now I'm here really debating about it. But I can't get over the fact that he hasn't played enough. You know, I forget, 15 to 20 snaps. And it is a remarkable story. But the other part, too, I keep changing my mind who's going to be. Like, Lamar Jackson, obviously, is going to be the MVP. So he's not even in the category anymore for comeback player of the year. So, you know, it's funny how that works. Like, you could come back from something, but if you're too good, you don't count anymore because you're MVP. But, you know, I was going to say, actually, Baker Mayfield a week until last week. And then he just had a terrible game.
He's still on the
short
list. He's been great.
Obviously, he's still there. And then for me, that's the other part. If I'm going to say Hamlin shouldn't be the comeback player of the year because he doesn't have enough snaps, then I can't pick Joe Flacco. He doesn't have enough games for me. He's been great.
Yep.
So, you know what? So I'm just going to go here because I just can't get over Baker Mayfield's stinker last week. I'm going to go Matthew Stafford. You know, I covered that team a year ago. They were atrocious. But he was beat up, got the spinal cord contusion. I was in New Orleans, Matt, and this guy was saying he couldn't feel his legs. He couldn't feel the lower half of his body. Like, and I'm like, is this guy going to play football again? He had a severe concussion, too, maybe a week before that. And this guy, he's a gamer. He's tough. For him to, you know, had to sit out the rest of the year, we were really considering he's not going to play anymore. And then there was talks about being traded to the Jets, too. And for him to do this,
like, and also should have retired immediately.
Yeah, like what
just,
are you
just
doing
that conversation
here?
Alone, the man should have retired.
It's tough, and to be 3-6 also this season with a bunch of young guys. Like I think there's like 40 people who are either rookies or newcomers to the team, and to make it all work together and to be clicking and to make the Pro Bowl. I know the Pro Bowl doesn't matter, but I think we're overlooking Matthew Stafford a bit, and I'll go with him for my pick.
Good pick, solid pick. Look, I'll keep it short and sweet. You could go a lot of different ways. I have no problem. You want to go Stafford? You want to go Mayfield? You want to go Flacco? I don't think he's played enough. Like I mean, he's been there for a month. I just feel like I'm almost compelled. I have to go with DeMar Hamlin. I mean, the guy died on the football field last year.
Yeah.
Like for me, once he took one snap this year, he won that award for me. Now, I understand people who go, hey, look, man, he has had nowhere near the impact that other guys have had. I get it. No argument. The guy was clinically dead on a football field and came back. And to me, it's just a hard thing for me to overlook and be like, I can't, you know, I feel like I have to. I feel like I have to vote for him. For the record, I don't have a vote, but if I did, that's how I would go. So I'll go with DeMar Hamlin.
It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, though, like what the vote people are going to do.
Fascinating. All right. What's been going on in your life? We haven't talked here since the holiday. What's new?
Yeah, you know what? I'll kind of go back to a little more New Year's Day talk. And like we were talking, hey, we're not at the age where we're going out and waiting for midnight and all that. But I guess I'm now at the age where I wake up early at New Year's Day and I go to the Rose Parade. And, you know, I'm from Pasadena. I grew up there, so I'm used to the Rose Parade. But there was a few years where I just stopped going. I'm like, okay, I've been there, done that. And maybe because I in my 20s, I used to go out. I'm too tired. I won't wake up. And then when I got older, you know what? I value sleep. I don't even want to wake up. But this year, you know, my girlfriend Caroline, she's never gone to the Rose Parade. So I thought, you know what? Let's go do it. And we woke up early, a little bit of a grind. And my mom lives like less than a block from the Rose Parade, the Colorado Boulevard. So they had front row seats for us. And we got there, and it was cool. You know, it was where we are, it's the back end of the parade. So by the time people get there, it's like this 3-mile walk, and then people are like trying to give their best effort. They see the finish line. They're a little tired there. I'm not even sure I should tell this story, but I haven't gone in a few years. So maybe I missed this before, but I guess now they have people standing behind the horses with a trash can and like a broom to just pick up all the poop. And people kept saying poopers, scoopers, and screaming and giving them applause. And it was a good time. And I'm like, okay, I'm finally at the age where I wake up early and enjoy New Year's Day. Watch Michigan, Alabama. What a great game, too.
Yeah. You know, New Year's Day, I drove 13 hours from New York back to the Chicago area where I live. And I got to give it to my daughter, man. She's 6. Well, my oldest daughter. She's 6. And she drove both ways, and she was just couldn't be happier. Fine, like no problem. How long is it, Dad? Oh, we have 9 hours left. Oh, okay, it's not that bad. Sit there and, you know, so she was great. But I got home for overtime of the Alabama-Michigan game, sat down, saw the end of it. I will tell you, I've always wanted to go to the Rose Bowl. I've never been there. So one of these days, I will get my rear end out there because I've always wanted to go. Always. It's like on my bucket list for football. I always wanted to go there. I always wanted to cover a game at Lambeau. Did the Lambeau thing this year. In fact, saw 2 games at Lambeau this year. Would like to get to Pasadena. That's awesome. For me, and nothing crazy, I would just say like this is my favorite time of the year. I mean, there are other times of the year too. Like even though I'm not a huge college basketball guy, although I do like St. John's and I follow them, like I love March Madness. I'm weird in the sense, like, I won't even really get seriously into college basketball till right around now because our jobs are just so all-consuming with football, right? Like, yeah. And then I have 2 kids and a wife, and I'm trying to watch the Knicks, and I'm trying to watch the – and it's just like, if I start watching St. John's and they're playing Hofstra, I'm divorced, okay? So I kind of got to wait till we get into the conference players are into now. But, like, I'll kind of casually watch it, and then I'll start really watching it, like, as we get down the stretch. And then by the time, like, we get to March Madness, and I'll sit down and watch the Sunday Selection Show, and it's, I don't know how you are with this, but I haven't watched Utah State one time. I couldn't name anybody off that team, but I'm looking at the bracket. I'm like, yeah, I like Utah State in this game. And it's, I just love sitting down and watching like the days, like the round of 64. It's just awesome. Like, I hope John doesn't assign us anything those days because I'm not getting anything done. Yeah.
Is it during the week of free agency? Hopefully not, right? Or after?
It's like, yeah, it's always right around it. It's usually like the week of. Yeah, it's like Thursday, Friday. So I don't give a damn about those playing games and Dayton. That's all nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, man, I love – now, I don't need to know anything about Belmont. When they're playing like as a 15 seed and some 2 seeds on the ropes, oh, I'll tell you what, man. What was it, I think a year ago, 2 years ago, when Kentucky lost to like St. Peter's in the 2-15 game? St. Peter's is from Jersey, like right around where all my family's from. So everybody was going nuts because St. Peter's is beating Calipari, who to me, oh, he can't lose enough. But in any event, like I loved it. So that is a fun time of year. But this is a long way of saying I love this time of year, where the NFL playoffs. One thing about football, every game's game seven. There's no like, you know, if you split these games on the road, then you go home. No. Like, you got one game. You better bring it. You better have all you have. Yeah, and it's, I love it. Like, there's, you know, yeah, a lot of the games, they go the way you expect, but some of them don't. And there's always one or two in the playoffs. You're like, how did that team win that game? Like, that's what makes it so much fun. I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. We're, you know, a couple days away from cutting off a lot of the fat here. 18 teams will be home for the winter. 14 teams will be left, and there's not a whole lot of, you know, for the, use the lack of a better term, there's not a whole lot of weak sisters where you're looking at, like, some years you're looking like these three teams are garbage. They have no shot. There's a couple probably this year that you'd be like, eh, I don't know if they can really win a game. There's a lot of teams that you could make a legitimate case for in the conference title games or even further. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, that's the most exciting part about the NFL playoffs, and maybe it kind of helped that the Ravens beat the 49ers because they seem like the one juggernaut that could probably roll into the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, maybe they got some weaknesses, you never know. And going off of your college basketball mention there, Matt, it's funny because I usually don't care either until maybe late February or early March into the tournament. I went to a small school out here. It was, you know, I guess, you know, in terms of name, it's not that well known, but I went to Cal State Northridge, and I'm actually checking in now because they're actually winning for the first time since like in maybe 2009-10, like they've done nothing. And they're from the Big West Conference. And when people ask me, what's that? Well, that's the one that UNLV was in during the Larry Johnson days. They've been long gone from the Big West. But it seems like this could be a good year. They could make it. So I've been tracking them. Thinking about going in a few weeks to check out a Northridge game. But, yeah, come on March, and they're in a tournament as a top seed. I might even make it to the conference tournament to see, check them out. But I'm that's a cool thing about being part of a small school. If they get in and make some noise, there's nothing like it.
It's funny. I went to a D3 school. So for me, I don't have that. But my wife went to Bradley, and they're in the Missouri Valley Conference. And so they've been in a bunch of times. And then my sister-in-law was at Loyola Chicago when they went to the Final Four. And we were living in Chicago. Like, that was crazy. That was... I remember like when they first started winning, like they were like an 11 seed, like, what the hell, they won a game. And then they got to the Sweet 16, like, oh, that's pretty cool. Then they got the Final Four, and you're like, this is unbelievable. Like, is this team actually going to win it? And then I, even though I grew up in New York, I spent 2 years as a kid in Virginia, when I was like 6 and 7, and would visit George Mason University all the time because they had like open basketball. I'd go play with my friends. And they had that crazy run years ago with Jim Larrañaga, and they beat Rudy Gay and UConn. They went to the Final Four. It's like, it's fun when those schools make, like when Butler, now Butler's in the Big East, it's all different, but like at the time, like Brad Stevens, and they got to the finals those 2 years. I mean, if Hayward hit that shot against Duke, it's the greatest shot in basketball history, right? It was, I mean, inches away, but no, it's a fun tournament because unless you're really invested in one of the favorites, you're just rooting for upsets. Like, who's the monster who goes into that tournament and is like, you know who I want to win? Kentucky. Like, if you do that, you're a serial killer, right? Again, unless you are a Kentucky fan.
Yeah.
Who's going into this thing like, you know what I want to see? Chalk. That's what I want. So it's so much fun to watch it all play out and unfold. But in any event, so listen, thank you for joining us this week. And thank you for joining us all season. Obviously, we're going to keep it rolling here through the playoffs and beyond. But if you haven't already, please subscribe. Leave a 5-star rating, a review. We'll read your question if you have one. You know, all that good stuff. If your team's on the bubble this week, good luck to you. If they're playing for draft picks, hopefully your team loses and it helps you out. But hey, after this, next time we come back, man, 14 teams, that's it. We're only going to be looking at 6 games. So we're going to really be drilling deep into each one of them. For Gilberto Manzano, I'm Matt Verderant. Thank you so much for joining us again, and we will see you next week.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.